Hey guys, welcome to another edition of Cyclone Fanatic TV Live. I'm Jared Stansbury, joined as always by Jeff Woody. Before we get started, I've got to remind everybody that CFTV Live is presented every single week by our friends over at Agrigold. They know corn, 60 plus corn hybrid options, 18 select soybean varieties, and they cover 17 different states, Jeff Woody. That's a lot of states.
That is
That's almost half the states in America.
That's just shy. We'll work on math. That's closer to a quarter than it is half.
It's okay. I don't care.
We're gonna get there. We'll get there. Your math will come around.
You can look them up at agrigold.com or give them a call at 1-800-262-7333. Agrigold, they know corn, and they are the presenting sponsor of CFTV Live every single week. So, Iowa State, another loss, but I think there's reason to feel optimistic this week because they definitely showed some improvement in the against TCU.
And the thing is you know, the cliche of you see the biggest improvement from week one to week two. What the team that you saw this weekend was the team that we were expecting to see week two. So that big improvement that they made from week one to week three, it was really the reason why a lot of people are disappointed against Iowa. But they made those steps to be more fundamental, to make stuff make more sense, where they're going to make smart plays, they're going to make easy plays, they're going to protect, they're going to get some type of run action going, they're going to be able to do something to alleviate drop back passes and quarterback runs. So they did improve, and I think that's the promising part of it. The thing that does give you a little bit of pause is there's a long way to go. There's a lot of fundamentals that we still got to improve. There's run fits. We got to understand situations a little bit better where it's first and 10. They've got a back in the backfield. You can't just go all out to go sack the quarterback because you think it's going to be a sack. You know, we're going to show that later. We got to understand situations better. And then again, just general fundamentals, like our secondary is covering really well. But once you get to the ball, they're not playing properly as far as getting their head around.
Yeah.
And that's just a feel thing where some coaches are going to coach it differently. And they've only had three games with this new staff, so there's not a ton of teaching film to say, like, hey, this is what you do in this situation. So it's a learning process, and I don't mean this to sound coarse, but that was essentially a practice on Saturday.
When you look at the game, where did you see the biggest improvements from week one to where they are right now? What area of the game do you think they've gotten the best?
Well, I think
better at?
Partially because of how bad it was week one, but yeah. The offensive line.
Yeah, I'd probably agree.
And this is the third different offensive line combination. And I want to take a second, and I wrote about this in my article that I do for the Des Moines Register every week. I just want to take a second and recognize Nick Fett and Ryan Bobeck, because Brian Bobeck is the point guard of the offensive line. He calls everything. He's the one that sets all of where the blocking schemes are going. And he's got to understand, because there's going to be somebody on either side of him that he's going to have to combo block with. And for that, a center wants the same guards, because he knows exactly, like we talked about before, strong or weak. If I'm a strong dude or a weak dude as a center, I need to know what that feels like. He's had three different left guards in three consecutive games and two different right guards at the same time. I mean, it's the fact that he's done that and still been at least moderately productive is impressive. And then even more is Nick Fett played game one at right tackle, played game two at left guard, and played game three at left tackle. That's, again, to use a different analogy, same, not Monte Morris, but Naz Long starts game one at shooting guard, game two at center, and game three at power forward. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the type of stuff that Nick has been doing. So those two guys, and then Pat Scoggins was announced that he's moving over to left guard. So Pat Scoggins is going to be playing a new position. So I think the shuffling is natural, that the coaches are finally getting to see what guys look like in games.
Yeah.
But to have suspensions and injuries and dealing with all that stuff, I think those two dudes specifically, and then Scoggins gets an honorable mention as to how hard they've been working to improve. And we finally saw some improvement on Saturday.
I think it's crazy when you think especially about Nick Fett. He played in one game last year, or started one game. Like, this is a dude that was completely off the radar at this time a year ago. And then at the end of the season, I would wager he played as well as any of the other guys did in that Oklahoma State game.
Yeah.
And now he's been maybe the best one they've had this year.
Yeah, and again, if he can just nail down a position, and for my money, I think his natural position is actually left tackle.
Yeah.
And so that's probably one of the reasons why.
He was there when you were there.
He was there when I was there. Well, thing with Fett is he took a year off too he went back to work on his dad's farm because he couldn't afford school as a walk-on, so he had to go back and work on the farm in Audubon. So with Fett, a kid like that, I think his natural athletic talents and his size is a better fit at tackle because he's longer and taller, which, like I was saying before, it's if you can bend and you're 6'8", that's what Kelechi Osemele, he's playing guard. He's 6'7" in the NFL, but he's flexible, so he can his height isn't a disadvantage, which a lot of tall dudes stay tall, and at a guard, you're facing Demon Tucker where you're going to get pushed up. So at tackle, your height is a match with your athleticism. So Fett's natural position is probably left tackle, which, discipline issues aside, that's probably one of the reasons why J.P. Filbert probably isn't in the starting lineup, because they said, oh, this is the way our left tackle is supposed to be playing. Let's leave this Fett kid here.
Yeah, I don't think that I don't know. I'm not too sure what J.P. Filbert's status is going forward. But I do think it is. I actually had no idea about that thing about Nick Fett having to take a year off. Mm-hmm. It would be nice if they could have him for one more year, maybe.
It would be, because he is the quintessential Iowa farm kid.
Yeah.
Like, he is humble. He's quiet. He comes in, does absolutely just crushes whatever work you give him to do as hard as he's possibly going to do it, and then takes his helmet off, literally puts his boots on, and leaves.
I think another thing that you have to look at and feel good about from that game on Saturday is, you know, Mike Warren's production got some more carries, and then it seemed like he maybe is getting back to what he was last year.
Yeah, and this is something that I have a little bit more familiarity with, and I think, Gray, once we get to pull up clips, have Mike's run be the first one, because we'll parlay this. We'll transition one to the next. And the thing with Mike, and you always hear about it with a new quarterback and new wide receivers, of you got to have familiarity with each other. Like, for example, there was a lot of times in the TCU game where, say, Dondre Daly's running a crossing pattern, and always the phrase is sit versus zone, run versus man. So if you're open in a zone, stop. Mm-hmm. Because if there's a zone here and a zone here and you're running right here, if you keep running, you run yourself covered.
Yep.
So you sit versus zone, run versus man. Well, the problem is if I'm expecting you to sit, the zones are here. If I'm expecting you to sit here and you sit here and I throw the ball here, it looks stupid. It's an incomplete pass. It's not a big mistake. It's just you're not on the same page, because where you're supposed to sit versus those zones and how fast you're supposed to run against man, it's different in every play, and it's different in every playbook. So quarterbacks and wide receivers have the same thing of, I got to be on the same page. Now, what people don't say enough is running back and offensive line has the exact same thing. Mm-hmm. Because this is Mike's third offensive line in 3 weeks, like we were talking about, and it's his second offensive coordinator in 2 years. So he hasn't had a lot of time to feel out exactly what our run's going to look like.
Yeah.
So on the play that, if it's pulled up,
can we get it
pulled up? Because I think it's a good time to head up to the TV. One of the things that you'll notice is Mike he hasn't lost any physical ability. He hasn't lost any physical tools at all. What he's done is felt less comfortable with the blocking schemes in front of him. It's what he's not seeing is a full open picture. Like, when you're familiar, before we start moving anything, before you're familiar, if I know what these five guys are doing to this box, I'm going to know there's five guys blocking, one guy unblocked. I got to know where that guy is. And I also have to know what these guys are going to do to play. So when you're watching film, I get to see that they're going to say, for example, they fill hard, or say they fill backside, or say these safeties fill hard in the run game. I got to know what the full picture is, because imagine Mike Warren, about 5'11", is standing in a field of guys that are 6'6". So you can't see what's coming through. You just have to know. You have to anticipate what's going to happen. And then once you see what you anticipate, your anticipation and your reaction pairs together and you get big runs. So what Mike doesn't have right now is a lot of confidence in anticipating what's going to happen, because he doesn't know what these five guys are going to do. So we'll watch this play happen, and you'll see that even though he runs this well, this is blocked really, really well. So go ahead and hit play. So this is blocked really well, and he ends up skirting through to the front side, but he's still a little timid. And that's not a problem now. It's understandable because he's learning an entirely new scheme. So if Mike were to know fully what's going to happen, and I know that this wide receiver, because a lot of their wide receivers are also new, so I don't know what downfield blocking is going to feel like when it comes open. So if I know that this guy is a bulldog and he's going to come in and dig this safety out and give me a little bit more space when I come through, then I'm going to get a dig out here and I'm going to understand what's coming free. So I got to know where I'm going to put myself, where I'm going to space myself at. So as soon as I see the clearing, I know that this guy is going to be filling down and this guy's going to block him, and I'm probably going to bounce out, be one-on-one to the corner. But he doesn't know that. He's not familiar with it yet. So go ahead and hit play, and we'll pause it when he gets to about the line of scrimmage. So freeze that there. You had a great combination block that pushes the defensive lineman by. We leave this guy unblocked to read the quarterback. We get great combination where this guy's almost going to get put on his back. So this is...
Is that Fett that drove him way back? Yeah, yeah, I was going
to
say.
So this is exactly what you want out of a zone read scheme. You're getting huge push to the second level. You're getting big movement on the front side. And this is the blue line of the line of scrimmage. We haven't moved this guy very far, but we've moved him laterally. Mm-hmm. So you've got this run lane that's perfect. It's exactly what you want to feel. So as the team progresses a little faster, a little farther, I'm going to know exactly what this feels like for Mike. So he's going to try and he should be coming to dig out the safety, let it play a little bit farther. Doesn't quite get there. That's the guy that forces him back to bump into the corner. So everything's going to tighten up and be more of a synchronized dance the more we play. Now, what it looks like when you're comfortable, so pull the TCU big run. So what it looks like when you're comfortable is when I know what's going to happen, then I can play a little freer. And this kid's a freshman. This running back for TCU is a freshman, but he's been playing within the same offensive line, and it's an established system, and I can trust that these guys know what they're doing. Mm-hmm. If I don't know what I'm doing, I can trust that these guys know what they're doing. So part of this is Iowa State getting out of position, but part of this is just familiarity within a system. For a slight sidestep away from running backs, it's first and 10. This is the situation I was talking about in the intro here. It's first and 10, there's a running back into the backfield, and there's formation into the boundary, meaning the multiple receivers are towards the sideline. So FIB, formation into the boundary, this is probably a run set. The reason why is because I'm going to take 1, 2, 3 guys that have to match up to this side. I take defenders out of this space. So all of this is open, unguarded space. So it's either a one-on-one concept for this guy, or we're going to run a pass set, or we're going to run the ball because there's so much empty grass.
Yeah.
Another way to try and detect this, which Baylor doesn't do it this way. They just get a quarterback that's got a howitzer on their right arm. But what this guy does is he's going to take his split really, really wide, and that takes the corner out of the play. So right now, you got a safety here, and you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Six dudes from inside the numbers to inside the numbers. So that's this set is designed to run the ball. So as a defender and as a linebacker and as a lineman, I got to understand what I'm looking at. So this is, again, familiarity with the system, familiarity with playing, and just getting general reps. I got to know this is probably a rundown. So on rundowns, as a defensive lineman, I want to move the line of scrimmage back, but I don't want to get it all the way back to here. Because then you treat it like a screen, and then the running back, as soon as they're gone, you're not going to chase down a tailback. So we'll play this for a second and freeze it quickly. Freeze it right there. So you want to move the line of scrimmage back a little bit, not all the way back here. So a couple things that Iowa State did wrong is not understanding this is a rundown.
Yeah.
So I can't just bury myself.
That's what I was going to say. It's so in that was that a called thing? Or
so
was
run that
just,
back. Run that back.
Because he, I mean, it looked like he went there almost at the snap.
Go ahead, play it. So this is a twist. So this was supposed to be a twist, which it's fine.
Yeah.
But you don't want to bury yourself. You don't want to lose your ground. So DeMond Tucker, it was a twist call, and he was trying to, so the intent of this, run that back here. Just the intent of this as a twist is I'm going to take the center with me and I'm going to get the end back inside here as the center and the guard follow me. So it's sort of like a rub route as a wide receiver. But again, even if it is a twist, what you don't want to do is give yourself up as a chance to make a tackle. And when he was on this slant, he gets buried into the ground and it gets clogged up for the defensive end to come in.
So is this a situation where it's just like you need to play in react rather than just go?
So like, this is one thing that is a little bit undervalued with defensive linemen is the value of using a big offensive lineman to your advantage. Uh-huh. So if I'm DeMond Tucker and I'm running this as a twist, yes, I need to pull the center away because as if I'm twisting and DeMond's here, then I have to get the shoulder, the center's shoulders to turn so the defensive end comes right here. So it's fine that he twisted, but what you can't do is he submarines himself where instead of pulling my shoulder this way and keeping me in a pile, he gets buried to the ground on the backside here, so he stops becoming a viable tackler. What that also does is him getting buried into the ground clears an extra 2 or 3 yards of space for the running back to come through. Yep. What you can do is if I'm going to get caved down and I'm going to play the guard, then I eat up the guard and I pull the center here while making just a pile. Not meaning bury yourself like this, but making a cluster of two guys trying to block me, because if there's an offensive lineman in a space where a running back's trying to run, he can't run there because there's a human in the way. Mm-hmm. So on a twist, there's a way to execute it for the run, and there's a way to execute it for the pass.
Watching this here, I'm looking at the linebacker on the bottom of the screen. I can't tell if that's Willie Harvey or Regan Northrop
it's
there.
It's Willie Harvey.
Willie?
Yeah.
It looks like he's just bound and determined. I don't know if he's cheating or if that's the play, but he's coming off the edge there, and you said it's a run play. Do you think that was a call play for him to be coming in hard off there, or do you think he just got a little too antsy? Because when I'm watching this here, it looks like that should be his gap, and he completely just left
his guy. That's kind of how it looked to me, too.
So there's a couple different answers to that. One, they could be. Now, I say it's a rundown. It's a run formation. They could have shown on film that they throw 85% of plays out of this. Mm-hmm. And if you're Coach Haycock and you're calling a defense, you see trips FIB, 1, 2, 3, 3 guys, formation of the boundary. You see trips FIB, then you think, all right, they're probably going to throw first down. If that's the case, I'm wrong. And Coach Haycock is right. And the defense is right. Now, Coach Haycock also could have done this, where a lot of times it's a pass down, so I'm going to send pressure, but I also have to understand that it is first down, and these guys have to understand it. So you can twist, and you can create good pass lanes for yourself, but also treat it like a rundown. So these guys, are, if they twist, they have to be a little bit more cautious, and they're going to stand up. Now, where the biggest mistake is made is because we'll come over to the whiteboard real quick. So if I've got guys out of the box and it's trips formation of the boundary, I have a linebacker here, I have a linebacker out of the box like that. This is the way they ended up lining up. So they're playing 1-on-1 here. So their linebacker, it actually says nose guard, their linebacker is lined up right over the running back. So how this is fit is he's going to go to this gap, he's going to go to this gap, and he's probably having this gap.
See, what it looks like more what – I think it's Jaquan Bailey that's at that Leo position. Mm-hmm. It looks more like he engages his guy and, like, starts to push him back, and then it's like, oh, yeah, I forgot I was supposed to twist.
Right. So the way that this should end up fitting is if he's going to go across this gap, pull the center and the guard with him, and he's supposed to come around and fill here.
Yeah.
He's got to get there faster, and which makes – this not a problem, because there's a couple ways to go about this where if the twist is and we're just trading gaps, if I'm just trading going from this A gap to this B gap, then it's a short twist. What a long twist would be is going from this A gap all the way out to the C gap, which is hard to do. So most likely what this intent was supposed to be is from this A gap to this B gap, pull the center across, pull the Leo around, pull the sandbacker back here. Now, what happened is we got this DeMond Tucker got into the B gap, which he was supposed to do, got too far up the field. Our Leo doesn't get over, so your run lane is right here.
Yeah.
Now, who has to make up for this?
The middle linebacker.
Will linebacker.
Yeah.
He's got to see run action to the field, and he's got to get himself into this hole. What doesn't happen, I believe this is Regan Northrop. Regan Northrop is too... He sees a 300-pound guy coming to him, and he's too concerned with the dude and not the responsibility.
Yeah.
So he gets hung up on a block where he should be filling and making sure that this hole doesn't stay open. He's too busy engaging with the offensive line and gets stuck. So go ahead and play it. So he should be coming in farther, and he should be playing over the top. He's too busy engaging with the linebacker or with the lineman. What he should do is, rather than seeing this guy and engaging this way, knowing, shoot, I got to get here, yep, and he's going to engage this way.
Yeah.
So he's got to present himself more in the run lane because that's where the play is designed to go.
Can a lot of this, like, you just – you get better at it from just playing, and it just takes time to, like, kind of – I don't know. I not necessarily like catch up to the speed of the game, but like you have to be able to react as well as like make your plays within the system.
This is just youth. Okay. This isn't necessarily within a scheme.
Yeah.
Because Reagan Northrup is, correct me if I'm wrong, a sophomore.
Redshirt sophomore.
And Jaquan Bailey's a true freshman.
Yep.
Those are young guys, and if they're gonna make a mistake, they're gonna make a mistake in this age. And the more they play, the more they're gonna understand. Okay, this is why Jake and AJ were so good, is because if this play were to happen, this happened a lot. Like if you were to go back and watch Iowa State's film when Naughton Klein and Jeremiah George were playing, this still happens because occasionally, sometimes a guard just does a really good job of passing off the twister and sticking a defensive end, and you have this giant run lane. Mm-hmm. What smart linebackers, and I don't mean this as a negative to Reagan, I say smart in the sense of seniors, juniors, guys that have played a lot of football and study a lot, are going to see 3-by-1, one receiver to this side. They're probably going to want to run zone to this call, and it's going to cut back. I need to be right here. This linebacker is going to play over the top, and you've got two guys that are filling the spot. Great linebackers can understand what those things are going on, even if the defensive line gets caught. So it's just an experience thing, and they're going to get better at it, but this is just youth. It's youth. I don't want to get hit in the face by a 300-pound guy, rather than trusting the fact that if I let myself get to the front side or get to the play, then I'm going to be all right.
It's one of those things where, like, as you're in the system longer, it becomes more like second nature to mm-hmm. react that way rather than just you're just reacting as a football player, like
right.
just seeing the play and just going to do whatever you
right.
doing.
Right, and younger guys still kind of harken back to high school a little bit, where if this is high school, that guard's probably, I mean, even in Florida, that guard's maybe 250.
Yeah, you can overpower
this guy's 310.
Yeah.
And even if a guy engages me and I'm Reagan Northrup, I'm probably stronger and more athletic than the guy that's blocking me, so I can engage him and throw him away and still make the play. That doesn't happen because this guy runs 4.3 and that guy's 310 pounds.
Yeah.
So the mistakes that you make are mistakes of overconfidence with yourself because you haven't experienced this yet. So again, it's going to get better. It absolutely will, because it just playing more football makes you better at football. It's just little things that are still going on at Iowa State, which is youth and inexperience with the system.
So my question to that is, we're going to be young throughout the year, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's a huge hole.
Mm-hmm.
That hole's massive. I mean, mm-hmm. Jeff Woody, you could have ran 70 yards right there, do you think?
I could have run about 30 and got walked down by somebody.
But what I'm saying, do you simplify it to just a base defense right there where you're just telling Willie Harvey on the side, hey, you got to stay here and fill your hole and we're not crashing or we're not trying to do stunts here? What can the coaching staff do between now and San Jose State in the future games to where, you know, we might give up 7-8 yards, we might get pushed back a little bit, but we're not going to give up the 70-yard run here on first and 10. Like, is there something they can do?
So the stuff that they can do is these guys just got to understand. So this is really good teaching tape, and it's something that as you practice it, this is something that should pick up quicker because you made such a, not necessarily an egregious mistake, because that's not an egregious mistake. It's an obvious mistake. And when you make an obvious mistake like this, these guys are going to play better. Now, for Coach Haycock, if they're still doing this, then one of the things you have to do is, yeah, you have to simplify the system. You can't twist on potential rundowns because it gives the possibility of a guy getting out of position because there's so much more going on. So if Coach Haycock says, okay, Bailey's not really great at getting across. He gets too excited. He wants to engage a tackle. He wants to hit somebody. He gets too tied up in getting off of that twist. We can't twist with Bailey in the game. Or we can't twist to the front side or to the field side of a rundown for something like that. And you just understand, maybe if my guys aren't doing it right now, we use it very sparingly or we work it in practice and we don't run into the game.
All right, what do we got next?
So I think we don't need to watch him run all the way down to the end zone because it's just a kick to the stones. I think the next thing is, because we'll go with the Lanning's good ball and Park's good ball, because that's, again, that's the storyline. Mm-hmm. Everybody loves talking about the quarterback. So I think one thing that's been nice in the first week and this week, not so much against Iowa, is that pass protection has been a concept that's been picked up pretty well.
Yeah.
Run blocking hasn't until this last week, but Joel, for the most part, has had time, which has given him time to understand what's going on in front of him. Now, again, there's that I need to understand what my receivers are going to do, too. And Dondre Daly's been in and out of lineup, but the more that they've played together, the more they're understanding what's going on. So Lanning and Dondre and guys like Lanning and Dondre and Lanning and Lazard, those guys are starting to feel out a little bit more smoothly what they're doing. So this is it's great protection. We finally get a great pocket. We keep, again, we want to get two guys on the outside of the pocket, yep, two guys in the front of the pocket, and then the defense wants to squeeze that, and the offensive line wants to keep that away. And this is a great pocket because you get a guy outside, you get a guy outside, and your defensive tackles get stuck right here. So he's got plenty of space that he wants to play with. Now what TCU does is, or excuse me, what the route combination is they're going to run this guy out to pull open a window, and then Dondre Daly is going to run a curl, he's going to run a hook right here. So this is it's a trust system scheme because the way this is read is I have to see, again, 6'1", 6'2", in a field of 6'6" dudes.
Yeah.
So a lot of this is anticipation as opposed to visually seeing it. So now that I trust the system, in my pre-snap read, I look and I see these guys, what they're doing. There's a safety and there's a corner and there's a linebacker. I see what's going on. I know what I'm going to read. I know that we're going to get a clear out here and we're going to get a curl behind here. And he's able to have time to make that decision and deliver an accurate ball. So go ahead and play it. So this is what you'd actually expect to see a little bit of as the season goes on farther. Run that back, too. So one thing, go back to the start of the play here, too. So one thing that you have to make sure that doesn't happen in this play, this is Joel being confident. This is what a comfortable quarterback looks like, partially because he's protected, but partially because he knows, maybe it's just this play, maybe it's a couple plays, but he knows this play. So this guy's going to blitz. This guy's going to be covering number two. The corner's playing number one. So the only person that's going to get in the way of this throwing lane would be is if either one of these linebackers decides to bump out. So he sees that this guy's blitzing. And, okay, I know that he's out of the throwing lane because he's trying to come hit me. So the only other guy that can break up this pass, assuming Dondre Daly runs his route right and pushes the corner to get him to bail and then runs a hitch right in front of him, is this linebacker. What Joel does a really good job of is he looks to this side and says, hey, linebacker, I want to throw to my left. And the linebacker has to play over to his left because if he's got a zone, it's this wide. And one guy has to – defenses have to cheat to one side or the other because if he thinks he's throwing to this side, he's got to play to that side of his zone. If he thinks he's throwing to this side, he's got to play to this side of his zone. So this guy's coming. I know this is the only guy if he plays over to get in the throwing window. So what Joel does, again, a really comfortable, good job of is he looks this way to move the linebacker. This linebacker's blitzing, all of a sudden that throwing window's wide open, and I don't even have to look at it to know that it's going to be there. So now that you know what Joel's looking at, this, when I say window, it means a tunnel of nobody in the way. And so this throwing window, he opened up by leading this linebacker away with his eyes, and Daly runs a great route and trusts exactly where he's going to be because, again, if I'm a quarterback and I'm looking this way and I have to throw to a wide receiver over here, I have to throw to a spot based on muscle memory. I can't look to see, okay, my cousin in Thanksgiving Day football is running a vertical. I'm going to throw where he's at. I got to say, okay, on this pass concept, he's going to be at 12 yards at about a 50-degree angle where I'm going to be. So I'm going to go like this without even looking at him and get him the ball. So this is a comfortable quarterback.
And so a lot of it just comes down to trust.
Trust.
Really. Like
it's a lot of trust.
You have to trust your guy that he's going to get to the spot.
You got
to
trust your guys because a guy, he can't look here and also look here.
Yeah.
He can't look here and also look here. So he's got a quarterback has to have an immense amount of trust that these guys are going to pick up these guys. These guys are going to do exactly what they're supposed to do with these ones, and I'm going to deliver the ball where it's supposed to be. So it's a pre-snap read, and it's a lot of trust. So This is a fantastic play by Joel of feeling comfortable, standing tall in the pocket, looking off the coverage, drilling a strike to Dondre.
Would I be Would I be crazy if I said that's maybe one of the better plays that he's made, like purely as a quarterback since he's been playing it for Iowa State?
This is the stuff that Joel is capable of doing. He's just, again, he's had four different offensive coordinators in 4 years. So it's not easy for him to understand what the protection looks like. So if I get this blitz, who's picking him up? If, say, for example, this guy, Chandler, was releasing on a route, then that means he can't protect, and I've got these five guys to pick up these seven, or these, yeah, these seven guys. Well, I have to know who's getting picked up, because like we talked about in the U and I game, when he didn't check hot, or when he didn't throw the hot route when he needed to, he has to know exactly the protection. So he knows, okay, Chandler's going to take any blitzer off this side. These five guys are going to sort through these five guys, and I'm going to be throwing off this one if I have to. So he's able to comfortably understand the protection, sees where it's going to get picked up, comfortably understand the coverage, sees where my guys are going to run to. Because take this back a little bit step further. Say this was a coverage that involved Dondre staying on the move. Well, if I'm throwing blind, I have to trust that he's going to stay on the move exactly where I expect him to stay on the move too. If he's staying in a zone, I got to understand exactly where he's going to convert that route and sit it. So it's a huge amount of faith and a huge amount of trust at this position. So it's not simple. It's not something, I say football is a simple game. Conceptually, it's really easy. To be able to trust that your guys are going to be in the right spot is tough. So this was one of the better plays the offense as a whole has run. So we'll watch that one more time, because this is a really, really proud of how this was handled. We get picked up, picked up, picked up, picked up. Wait for the guy to come around. We get a great blitz. A guy makes a play. You get a 20-yard run or 22-yard completion simply from just executing the way you're supposed to execute. So then we'll watch Park now, because there's another good thing with Park, because I think both guys actually played pretty well for the most part. There was some plays that were kind of boneheads, but again, that's it's either miscommunication or just trying to stress and make a play. So what this play is there's going to be a shallow route and a deep route that Park is going to be reading. One thing that Park can get away with a little bit more is he's got one of the biggest arms. He's just, like I was saying, he's just like Steel Jantz, where can throw it and the air hole whistles as he's throwing it. Joel does too, but Park's a little longer, guys, and more traditional throwing quarterback motion, so that ball's tighter. What Park does, he stands comfortably. He's able to, again, understand a little bit more of the – he understands the protection a little bit less and understands the route concept a little bit less, because he's staring and saying, once this guy gets open, I'm going to throw it. But what he can do because of his arm talent, and that's a really gnarly buzzword, is – because of his arm talent, he's able to kind of look at a guy and say, I'm going to throw it here, because he can, he can knock a pop bottle off of a fence post. And with him, it's not exactly the same. He knows he's protected, so he knows the protection. He doesn't consider this route as a possibility for whatever reason. Maybe it's the coverage, because he got four guys covering three, or maybe it's because he just doesn't really feel all that confident with it. So he knows he wants to play this route. So go ahead and watch this and watch his eyes, and knowing that he's going to snap it, he knows that he wants to play to this side a lot, double clutches, and puts a ball, again, just knock a pop bottle off a fence post. This was Jacob Park being an athlete, being a stud.
So I don't even know. Do you have a question here?
My question is not necessarily X's and O's. I think that was a nice throw by him. Showed good arm strength. He probably threw that ball 45 yards in the air. Do you like how the coaching staff is using both of them right now? It seemed like it was two on, two off. Are you okay with that? Would you like to see him do it any different? Or do you think it's going to be at some point, the hope is one quarterback just gets hot and that's who you stick with?
Well, I think for me, I don't mind using a two quarterback system, so long as both guys are able to do both run and pass. Because where you run into trouble is if you have a throwing quarterback and a running quarterback. Because if you have a throwing quarterback, it cuts out 50% of your playbook, because you know they're only throwing it when you get in there. And if you have a running quarterback, you know you're only running it when you get in there, like the 18-wheeler package that Texas employs. If you were to, we saw how that went when they went exclusively with him last year and Jerod Hurd. Because they're guys that don't throw all that well. They just run really well. So it cuts off 50% of your playbook when you put them in there, which is why this Park landing situation is different. Now, from an emotional standpoint and from a rhythm standpoint, guys, receivers have to know what the quarterback is doing, just like the quarterback has to know what the receiver is doing.
Right.
So a guy like Lanning may throw a ball not a lot faster or harder, but he may release it a touch sooner because he anticipates a certain play more, or Park, vice versa. That Dondre DeLeon, say that play that was solid, say Park likes to come to that a little bit later. Dondre has to push that route 1 or 2 yards farther. And in the heat of the game, and you see the coverage as a wide receiver, I see my open space, I see what's going to happen, I see the blitz, I know what my checks are. All of a sudden, I got to know the quarterback, so my muscle memory can't take over. I have to think for a second because I have to know I got to push this route 2 yards deeper. I got to push this route, cut this route a half yard short. So
it's another one of those things that just with reps and...
Reps and familiarity.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So with Park and Lanning at the same time, that's the only disadvantage, is the rhythm with the wide receivers gets off because each guy plays it differently. Mm-hmm. I think with repetition, they'll learn it. We'll be fine. But I don't mind for right now the two-quarterback system because both Lanning and Park can run the ball.
So obviously if they stick with this, it'll lead to some pretty sticky questions when we get to the off season.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what is this a thing that you would it be something that would work like moving forward that could get even better, like as you know a year goes on, or is it something that if you don't have to do it, you don't want to do it?
Going into an off season is where you have more of an issue than you do during the season.
Yeah,
because there's weird personality dynamics.
Yeah, like it just seems like that would not be very good for the team to be like constantly. It's just like a constant question, who's going to quarterback?
Right. So you don't want to deal with that from the media. You don't want to deal with that from your friends. You don't want to deal with that from your classmates. You don't want to deal with that as much as you can. It's sort of like in the show The Office, Jim and Michael were co-managers. That's sort of the same situation where who makes the decision? Who's the one that says, guys, because during the offseason, the coaches can't employ punishments for missing workouts or something like that. It's generally going to be the team leaders, the team captains, the captain of the captains, where if that guy is two guys, then who makes a decision?
Yeah.
And it's just it's weird dynamics. And it's not that it's bad, because the coaching staff can overcome that. So even if that happens and they play two quarterbacks throughout the season, they go into spring with two quarterbacks and they come out of spring with two quarterbacks, it's not that it can't work. It's just a different dynamic that's a little bit odd and harder to work.
I got a question from you. So you guys are going down to TCU. You're a player, right?
Mm-hmm.
How often would you sit there, and it's in today's world nonstop, how often were you familiar with this point spread as a player?
We would only see it, and it wasn't necessarily like we looked at how big of a favorite we were or what the exact point line was. We would look at if it's a huge amount or if it's close or if we're a favorite. Like, you're aware of that. Like, oh, guys, we're 29.5-point underdogs this week. Piss off, Vegas.
Yeah.
Or you're 3.5-point underdogs. Or you're playing, you know, for me, you're playing Kansas. Okay. We're dogs to Kansas. And that's a little motivation.
Motivation, yeah. So use that. So do you think the coaches are ever aware of it?
Do
you think
I know where you're going with this question.
No, I just am wondering.
There's no way that the coaches have any consideration of a point spread when they're making decisions in the game.
No way to be a degenerate, Adam.
No, I'm just wondering because, you know, Iowa State was not only 0-2, they're 0-2 against the spread. They were looking like there was an opportunity to go 0-3 against the spread. You kick a field goal, a meaningless field goal at the end. I'm just wondering if Campbell's looking at it.
Wasn't it about 4th and 5 on the 30-some yard line?
What's a field goal get you, though, Woody? I'm just wondering.
Huh?
What's a field goal get you in that situation?
Didn't Colnett miss an extra point earlier this year? So isn't it a great opportunity to get a kicker some confidence?
He made 10 or 11 straight field goals at that point. The guy's automatic for field goals.
It's a great opportunity to get your kicker some confidence. It's a great opportunity to get your...
I had to ask you that question.
Great opportunity to get your operations down.
It's so funny because you can't turn on SportsCenter right now without seeing point spreads. They don't just talk about who's a favorite or who's an underdog. It's how big of a favorite, how big of an underdog they are. I just wasn't sure if that ever seeped into the football team saying, hey, you know, we got beat, man, but we still cover the spread.
Nah, it's never pride of like, we covered it. It's always like I was saying, like, okay, Las Vegas is putting us as, you know, like Baylor 1 year. It's like 35.5-point underdogs,
yeah,
which we did not cover.
Almost.
That was the year that we got beat 72-6, which is one of the darker days, which was my birthday.
Wow.
That was 2000. I turned 23 on the day that we got absolutely pounded by Baylor, which in retrospect is probably not the best phrasing of that sentence.
So, changing the topic, this week I think sets up to be a little bit of a happier week for
Should
Iowa
be.
State.
Hopefully.
San Jose State's given up 10 sacks, or gave up 10 sacks last weekend, and then Kirk Holland tweeted out,
friend of the program.
Yeah, friend of the program, that they give up a sack every 6.5 pass attempts.
Yes.
If you're Jaquan Bailey, if you're Mitchell Myers, Justin Thomas, what are you looking at when you see that?
Well, I think I haven't watched game film from San Jose State, but there's two things you're thinking. One is personnel the problem? Because you see the stats, and then you're going to watch the game film, and you're going to say, okay, this is why they gave up the sacks. So is personnel the problem? Like, if I'm Justin Thomas, and I'm 9.5 feet tall, and I weigh 280 pounds, can I just beat the tackle like a drum? Yeah. Can I beat him like a drum? Or is it something that their offensive line doesn't communicate at all? And how they're getting these sacks is we're blitzing and we're stunning, and somebody's going to come scot-free. So if I'm a defensive line guy or I'm a defensive coach, the same thing I'm looking at is, what's the reason for this number? Where, say, for example, they're giving up 6.5 sacks or 1 sack every 6.5 dropbacks. Is that because their tackles or their interior linemen are getting smoked?
Yeah.
And if so, which one?
Yeah.
And if it's 4 or 3 guys are pretty good, their right guard and their left guard and their right tackle, for whatever reason, are really bad pass blockers, then I'm going to put Justin Thomas, hey, buddy, you're playing left defensive end. You're going against their right tackle. Demond Tucker, we're not going to be playing that Shea technique or on both sides. You're just going to be to the right side on that guard, and we're going to let you go. And that's where you just look for your advantages to say, like, which one of the guys or what's the problem with how these go. Now, obviously, there's an issue. They're second to last in the country in sacks allowed. They're also one of the – I think 108th in total yards allowed. So the defense – has some vulnerabilities. Their defense has some vulnerabilities, as does their offensive line. So there's a chance for Iowa State, so long as they're putting in the work they need to,
yeah,
to get a better result.
Do you have a prediction?
I haven't watched enough of San Jose State to know.
So we'll save that for the Cyclone Fanatic tailgate show on
Absolutely not. I need
Saturday
a prediction
morning.
Right. No, I need a prediction right now. Come on, Woody.
No.
Make a prediction.
I'm not going to make a prediction. I don't know anything about them. I'm not
going to
make.
You don't have to be right.
I'm not going to make an illogical prediction when I don't have any information on the person I'm picking.
We've seen your staff picks; they're not good anyway. Even
if
you are doing some research,
the staff picks. I won the first year that I was there. Second year, I fell back in the middle of the pack, and I think I'm pulling up the rear. Is it? Are you 3-11?
I think you are. Yeah. No, I'm not. I'm in the middle.
Somebody else.
I'm in like a 3-way tie in the middle.
Yeah, that's exactly.
I'm like dead last.
The first year I ever did it, I actually won it, and I've slowly gotten worse and worse every year. Doing it.
Yeah. No, I'm bad this
you
year.
You just jumped right in the middle of my tees for the Cyclone Fanatic tailgate show on Saturday morning.
Well, rebound.
Isn't it? If I'm correct, it's presented by Agrigold. Is that right?
It is. Yes, that is correct.
So you and me are just the Agrigold guys.
Absolutely.
But yeah, Saturday morning, I think it starts at 8.
8 a.m.?
Yeah, 8 a.m. We'll be out there on the north side of Jack Trice Stadium. Of course, we'll have On the Trail and all that stuff. You'll have Barely Audible. Is that tomorrow?
We have Barely Audible. We're recording it tonight. It'll air tomorrow.
Awesome. All right. You got anything else to add before we sign off?
Keep positive, Cyclone fans. We're making improvements. There's a long ways to go. There's a lot of stuff we have to improve, but we're getting better. And one more, I just want to shout out with Coach Campbell. And I don't know the full details of what happened with JP Filbert, but to stick to your guns in disciplining and getting rid of an action that you are not okay with, if that situation hasn't resolved itself and the behavior hasn't improved, stick to your guns regardless of the outcome. I'm a huge fan of what Campbell's doing from a discipline standpoint and getting guys to understand what's acceptable and what's not. Big fan of that move. And let's hopefully that turns and starts translating into some W's sooner rather than later.
That said, thanks for coming, Jeff Woody.
My pleasure.
We'll be back next week, 12:15. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. Have a great week.